Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Governor Tony Evers reveals his state budget that includes spending tens of millions of dollars on boosting funding for schools, expanding health care, and much more. Plus, the state superintendent race heats up as the field narrows down to two candidates vying for the top education job. And banning cell phones in all classrooms and overhauling student testing standards are among the bill's GOP lawmakers passed this week. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for February 21st.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
All right, we got a lot to dive into, of course, because this week Governor Tony Evers unveiled his two-year spending plan to lawmakers. And you and I have both been diving into the many, many pages, over 700 pages of his budget proposal, and also just looking at the budget in brief. First, let's just look at top-line numbers, how much the governor wants to spend. As you can see here on your screen, it's going to spend about $119 billion total, and that is roughly about a 20% increase compared to the last budget. Meanwhile, it would spend $50.5 billion in general purpose revenue. And then also that leaves about roughly $646 million in the general fund from 2025 to 2027, I should say at the end of 2027. But some of the highlights of this, right? Of course, this is spending a lot of money. It's a big budget. Some of the highlights include a $2 billion tax cut, but that would benefit middle income earners and also tax more of the wealthiest earners here in the state. He also would create a new tax bracket targeting millionaires. So if you make over $1 million a year, there'd be a new tax bracket that would rate them at 9.8% for individuals that are married, and then $500,000 for individuals. Now, the tax cuts also follow in a series of other areas, too. There's targeted property taxes for veterans, people with disabilities. He also wants to eliminate the tax on cash tips, utility bills, eliminate the sales tax on over-the-counter medicine. And there's even also more incentives for local governments if they freeze property taxes. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But I think what we want to get here is that, yes, there are tax cuts, but there's also big increases on individuals as well, depending on how much you make. But the governor's overall pitch is that his plan would combat the needless chaos that he believes is happening in the federal government, in the White House, with President Donald Trump. And that was a key focus towards the end of his budget address. Let's just take a listen from the governor on that issue.
Needless chaos caused by the federal government in recent weeks has already made preparing a state budget that much more difficult. With irresponsible decisions in Washington every day hurting people in Wisconsin, we will need to have state resources readily available to respond to basic and emergency situations alike. So, as the legislature deliberates my proposal, I urge you to take seriously the disastrous consequences federal decisions will have on Wisconsinites and our state, and plan accordingly.
Now, just looking at, you know, tax cuts, this is a very similar plan that the governor has put in his budgets the last four, right? We're at four now. And every time, they don't really get much traction.
So look, the governor, early in the day on Tuesday, talked about the $2 billion in tax relief, which is kind of relief, but it's outweighed by the tax increases. And let's look at this kind of bit by bit. First, the tax relief he's talking about, mostly he would buy down property tax levies. What that means is there's state aid that local governments get. He would give you more aid if you froze your property tax levy. It would amount to a 3% increase in your levy and the state aid. Well, that's an interesting idea, but what happens is in times of bad economics for the state, there's not the money to buy down those property tax levies. It allows levies to go up. It's not great long-term financial fiscal policy. Republicans did this for a decade in the 90s, or sorry, the 2010s. They call it buying the levies. More money you put in, less service of property taxes. What happens, though, is at some point the state money dries up. There's a problem there. So, interesting idea, but Republicans aren't going to do that. The tax increases, two of them are throwbacks to the last budget. One, capping the manufacturing ag credit. So, for manufacturers only, not the agricultural piece of it. It capped at $300,000 of activity. That was in the last budget. Republicans nixed that. He also wants to cap the capital gains tax for people who are wealthier. They did that last time, didn't do that. The new one is the tax bracket for the wealthy, kind of a populist theme, much like the governor's proposal on health care insurers. So if you are an insurer and you deny too many health claims, they would audit you essentially. The question I would ask is, who likes your health insurance company, right? So that's probably popular. Taxing the rich, that's probably popular. Overall, though, a lot of stuff in here the governor's done before plays well with the public, but not going to happen. This budget is, the phrase in the Capitol is always, show me your budget and you show me your priorities. So here are Evers' priorities, but they're not going to happen because Republicans will not allow these things to happen because they're opposed to all these things that he wants to do.
Right, and talking about some of those priorities, he's spending big money on it as well. As you can see on your next screen here, looking about $500 million to lower the cost of child care, $500 million to overhaul the state prison system, $145 million to address PFOF contamination. I mean, the list goes on. $80 million towards improving reading schools. All these things look and sound great. You know, if you're a voter, yeah, I would like to invest here and there, but it's just not realistic of how much he wants to spend when we have a $4.3 billion projected state surplus, and we've heard over weeks and weeks and weeks by Republicans, we want to be cautious, we want to be reserved, we don't want to spend all of that, and they've already earmarked, hey, we want at least half of that on tax cuts. Yeah, the governor's plan actually, yes, says it's $2 billion, but as you explained, it's kind of a whole mix of things. It's not a widespread relief, which is what we heard from Republicans after the budget address say, we want not targeted tax relief just for the middle class, which Evers has been a huge proponent of. They want it across the board. We don't know what that looks like yet. It will be coming out in the coming weeks, maybe possible months. Do they put it in the budget? Do they do a separate bill? Something to keep an eye out for. Just overall Republican response, though, of course, typical press conference afterwards, calling the budget, many of the priorities from the governor, dead on arrival. That was a quote from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And as in years past, the GOP-controlled legislature is preparing to rewrite the budget from scratch, as they've done many times. Let's just take a listen from Speaker Voss on his reaction to the budget document.
In many ways, this is kind of like the movie Back to the Future. He tried these things for the last 2, 4, and 6 years ago in his budgets. Most of the stuff that's in the budget, the 20% spending increase, the $1 billion in taxes, all of the wasteful new programs that are being created and regulations on the private sector, the increases on business, the increases in income taxes, all of those things, dead on arrival.
So talking about tax cut plans, those were a lot of questions us reporters had at that press conference. Didn't get really a lot of details. Voss said that he's open to all tax cuts, you know, as, hey, why not? All of them sound good. Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu said he wants to impact all of the tax brackets. But again, the devil's in the details, right? It was not too long ago that Senator LeMahieu was a big proponent of a flat tax. That didn't go anywhere. Then we had a dueling plan in the Assembly. Then the governor had one. I don't think anyone wants to see that again, at least us, even for reporters' aspect of reporting on different plans. What we actually see, I think, is going to be something we're going to be talking about once we actually have the document.
Well, to the governor's credit, he has put a plan out. He has actually kind of taking the lead in the tax debate in Wisconsin right now by having an actual plan on paper. We have yet to see one from Republican lawmakers. They talked to us in December what they wanted to do. It's mid-February. There isn't a plan yet. From what I've been hearing from my sources, the two houses don't agree on things yet. They haven't really doing a whole lot in general in the Capitol, the legislature. But you would think if this was a big priority, they'd have something to try and get out ahead of the governor to try and take some of the, get, provide an alternative. They don't have one yet. So he's setting the governor's setting the debate about taxes right now his proposal.
And I also just want to highlight, too, education, too. As you know, he ran as I'm the education governor. It's something that he's a big proponent of for many, many years. It would be the largest investment that he would want to put towards in higher education universities of a Wisconsin system. Meanwhile, he didn't quite get to State Superintendent Jill Underlie's threshold of $4 billion, but got roughly about $3.5 billion in there. But these are also things that Republicans said they're going to likely nix. Also, special education reimbursement. Saw a bump there. Definitely going to be a talker in the coming days of what they do with education and property taxes, as those are kind of the big top two items.
And the governor said that Underlie's proposal was on the high side. So $4.3 billion was too high for him, but $3.4 is okay, apparently.
Yeah.
But still, that's a priority. Former state superintendent, it's education, talking about health care. You know, I feel like the governor's been trying to push back against Trump a little bit with these, both this speech and say the state, trying, we're going to be a a bulwark against the chaos in D.C. So worth noting that he's staking out these positions that if this is his reelection budget, he's going to run in 2026, you know he's going to run on, right? Education, I've signed tax cuts, I want to help you out in health care. The question is this a springboard to a 2026 reelection, or is this basically his, well, if I could, I'd do this, but I can't, so I'm going to go off and retire now after the session's all done.
Right. A lot of people often have, is this the legacy budget, right? Is this going to be the last and final one? Yes, there's a lot of, you know, looking at the document, there's a lot of the same stuff, but there's some new initiatives, especially, you know, the one with helping local governments. Hey, if you want more state aid, freeze your local property taxes. But as again, that could have complications down the road financially. Also worth noting, too, which stood out to me in the speech, is that he kind of urged lawmakers, well, he does that a lot, but urged them to be a little bit cautious with the federal government and the Trump administration. In his budget, he sets aside, I believe, about $500 million just to be, hey, if we need it, we need this emergency fund. Obviously, I think that fund's going to be much bigger because Republicans don't want to spend, you know, all of the surplus. But again, that is just the uncertainty that many governors and many federal officials are feeling right now because they don't know if they're going to lose their job or what programs are going to be cut as DOGE is kind of working at fast pace on Capitol Hill. All right, let's move on because it was also another busy election on Tuesday night. So a lot going on in the state on Tuesday, and that was, of course, for the DPI race. State Superintendent, the incumbent, Jill Underlie, did come out on top, receiving the most votes. And second place was Brittany Kinzer, who is now calling herself a moderate. She did have the backing, of course, of the Republican Party, who, you know, right out of the gate after the election was called, you saw the state Republican Party and many Republicans praising her. Asked her on a call yesterday, hey, what do you think about Republicans backing you? Are you going to change your tune on the campaign trail? And doesn't seem she's going to quite go there. Says she's, quote, here for the kids. She wants to try and remain nonpartisan, but you're still taking money from Republicans. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, also noteworthy with Underlie, who were the last fundraising reports to half of the fundraising that she had, roughly a little bit over $80,000, $50,000 was from the state Democratic Party. So now this really just kind of amplifies the race going forward. Before we kind of get into more about this race, I also just want to touch on talking to both candidates shortly after the race was called. The attacks ramped up a little bit, right? When you now don't have a three-way primary, it goes down to two, you can kind of start taking shots at one another, and that is something that both of them did. So let's take a listen from both candidates.
Yeah, I think the difference is very clear between me and Brittany. She's a voucher lobbyist. You know, she's advocating for policies that I think would ruin public education in schools in Wisconsin. And so I think it's my job going forward to just educate the voters on what the differences are and making sure that, you know, it's just absolutely very clear that we have one path where we can continue to do great things for our schools and our kids, or the other path, like I said, would, you know, certainly take us down to a race to the bottom.
The status quo is no longer acceptable to the community who, like me, know our children deserve so much better. Right now, Jill Underlie is unapologetic. She lowered the standards for our children and claims to have no regret about it. She also allowed Milwaukee Public Schools to spiral out of control as they mismanaged funding.
So kind of the dueling arguments that you heard from both the candidates there is you heard from Kinzer go after Underlie for, you know, changing the testing standards, which we've talked about many times before, just kind of ramping up now, targeting Underlie specifically for that. Meanwhile, on the other side, what I've noticed more from Underlie in the last few days and, of course, after the election is that she's really going after Kinzer for support of expanding the school voucher program. Underlie has long argued that the more you invest in vouchers, it takes millions and millions of dollars away from public schools. So those are two very dueling narratives we're going to hear in the next 6 weeks now.
Look, if you look at the results, if I were Underlie or Kinzer, I'd basically be spinning them a certain way, but there are problems for both of them. One, Jill Underlie is the incumbent. She got 38%. That's not a great number for an incumbent, okay? So if I'm Kinzer, I'm hitting on that number. If I'm Underlie, though, I'm looking at Kinzer going, you got 35%, right? You are the Republican-backed candidate. You are the one running from the right, and you only got 35%. What's that say about your potential for growth going forward, which leaves a question of Jeff Wright's supporters. Where are they going to go? Now, Wright is by no means a moderate. Like, he is running kind of a left-of-center campaign or ran a left-of-center campaign. He's obviously somebody who is about pro-public education, more aligned with Underlie philosophically. So will his supporters break one way or the other? You would think they'd more gravitate toward Underlie. Now, the next question is, the electorate on this past Tuesday, was it a 50-50 race? right? 50-50 electorate, like really true half Democrats, half Republicans. Looking at the numbers, doesn't look like it. Waukesha County, for example, I think Kinzer got about 51% in Waukesha County, roughly. In a typical election, the GOP number is around 60, 59. I mean, Trump won Wisconsin statewide in November at 59% in Waukesha County, which almost never happens. Mm-hmm. As a Republican, you're looking low 60s. So it tells me, it's another example of Democrats turn out more frequently than Republicans do anymore. Low turnout elections, you can rely on a more Democratic electorate. So this felt like on Tuesday a more Dem field. My question becomes, what's April 1st look like? And in talking to people, the impression I've gotten is that the Supreme Court race will drive everything. If Brad Schimmel wins a Supreme Court race, that gives Kinzer a shot to win the DPI race. If Susan Crawford wins the Supreme Court race, likely gives Underly the path to win, because that would drive turnout, right? Now, you could argue, and I've heard this argument this week, that voters tend to gravitate toward Democrats for education issues. Like the treasurer's race in 2022, remember? So Evers wins re-election as a Democrat. Josh Call wins re-election as a Democrat. Doug LaFollette wins re-election as a Democrat. And Lieber wins as a Republican for treasurer. Voters just kind of feel like Republicans are better on money issues, right? Like they kind of went that way for the treasurer's race. So likewise, there's probably a path for Underly to win even if Schimmel wins the Supreme Court race, people have argued me this week, which makes sense. That's what Democrats gravitate toward. But again, what's the electorate going to look like in April 1st? What's going to drive turnout the Supreme Court race? Then two, Kinzer raised $500,000 through like early February. If you're a Republican donor, you look what happened on Tuesday and go, I'm going to give her more money now after that performance, or I'm going to turn my focus to the Supreme Court race.
Right.
Because $500,000, which she didn't spend all of it, right? But she got 35%. Is that my best investment or the Supreme Court race? That's the question I'm getting from people this week about these results and what they mean going forward.
And it comes down to the issues too, right? I mean, let's be honest, the state Supreme Court takes up a lot of controversial issues that drive voters to the polls. If you're not really tuned in to the state superintendent race, and to be honest, in the past, there haven't been a lot of controversial issues, I think this testing standard thing is a blowing up a little bit from what I'm hearing from people on the ground. I mean, if you are a kid, if you have children and are very passionate about schools, and think your kid is not doing well or keeping up with the rest of the class, I mean, this is an issue you care about. If your kid is in Milwaukee Public Schools, I'm sure you've heard about the issues, right? The reporting, the financial, the late reports, the board is a mess. We just had this audit. I mean, there's no way really beating around the bush, but does Milwaukee need resources to get by? Of course. So that is something I think can also factor in. Or do people just skip it, right? You vote at the top of the ticket. Yes, it's still a statewide race. Don't know enough about it. Don't feel comfortable. I'm a Democrat, say, and I don't want to vote for Underly because of these testing standards. I mean, there's so many different factors that can go into it. I also think just because it was a low turnout race, it was really freaking cold, too, on Tuesday.
9%.
I was going to say a little closer to 10, but, you know, it's just going to be fascinating to watch. And I think based on what has happened in other statewide elections where people have, like Lieber or, you know, Ron Johnson, you know, coming out in 2022 when other Democrats won up and down the ticket, it's going to be fascinating because we truly are a purple state. All right, let's move on to the assembly was in session. And staying on the topic of education, they passed a series of bills that would overhaul the system. Kind of the big one, of course, reverting back to the old testing standards that were in place before Underly made these changes. That was a big talker. Another bill would ban cell phones in all classrooms, and I emphasize all because a lot of districts, about 90% DPI did a survey 2 years ago, I want to say. Most schools are complying, but if you hear from the bill sponsor, Representative Joel Kitchens, he said it's about enforcement. We want all schools to put the phones away. Putting cursive writing back in the classroom, that has been a bill that has been introduced over the last few sessions. And I think one time it reached the governor's desk and he vetoed it. He prefers local control, having classrooms do that. And then there's just another bill that would allow parents have a deadline. If you want to request what's being taught in the classroom, what's the curriculum? Yes, you can FOIA request that right now, but what this Republican bill would set a deadline, I believe about 10 days, roughly 2 weeks, that they would have to get back to the parent about what is being taught in the classroom. So all these bills, I could say most of them are likely going to be vetoed by Governor Evers. I think there's still a big question mark above the testing standards and lowering the benchmarks issue because Evers was critical of the move by DPI a few months ago.
So that's one that I wanted to highlight because usually, I stress usually, if there's good communication between a governor and his the caucus of his party, the caucuses know where the governor stands on a bill. If the governor was going to sign that reading standards bill, you wouldn't expect a party line vote in the assembly on the legislation, because people would say, okay, I can't be crossed with my governor that comes to death and he signs it. So I'm looking at that as a possible sign that he's not in favor of that, which is interesting because the governor's critical of Underleaf for changing the standards. Like we talked before, he's a former state superintendent. He doesn't like to kind of usurp the authority of others and mandates on local schools. Kind of been one of his things in his term in office. So to me, it might be a sign where the governor is, unless he didn't tell the caucus where he's at. Yeah. I hung him out to dry. So just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's going to be see what happens when that bill reaches his desk. All right, let's get to stock picks this week and kind of going back to the state Supreme Court. Rising this week is Brad Schimmel, seeing a lot more ad buys and money coming his way.
So look, Schimmel put out the call a while ago saying, hey, I need help from outside groups. I'm expecting these groups to come in, and they have delivered. Elon Musk, two groups associated with him are both, one's on TV, one's on radio. WMC issues Mobilization Council, tied to Wisconsin Manufacturing and Commerce, the biggest business group in the state. It's up on the air. It has flipped the spending in favor of Schimmel in this campaign so far over Susan Crawford, which is huge for him. Now, my question is, will the Democratic groups respond? So back in 2023, there's a lot of money flowing to Janet Protasiewicz. She actually got outspent in the final weeks of the campaign on the air, but the money flowed through her. So remember, candidates get better rates on ads than groups do. So she got more bang for her buck. What I'm watching is, as the spending ramps up, will it stay in the groups? Because those groups don't disclose their donors. So if you are a wealthy individual that's wanting your name out there being involved in this race, you can go through those groups and nobody will know. But if you give the state party, right, you'll be on a list of donors. That party can transfer money to the candidate and it's out there. So will they do that? Watching that. Also, I talked to a Democratic donor last week who, even as Crawford had more money raised than Schimmel, even the state party was raising more money than the Republican Party, said, look, our donors are fatigued. There is this kind of like anger about Trump winning last fall, the money put into like national campaigns and Trump won, not just that he won, but the margin he won by. They're not engaged right now. So my question is, will those Democratic donors get more engaged going forward? The Republicans have done a great job nationalizing this race, putting people on notice about this fundraising call that Crawford was on that was billed as a way to put more seats in play in the congressional map, to get those the attention of those folks. So now, will the Democrats respond? That's the big question for Crawford. Will they respond in kind, and will the money flow through the party to her? Because if that happens, she can kind of negate the spending advantage with a points advantage on the air.
All right, let's get to Mix. And this is the Green Bay Correctional Institute, which comes after the governor unveiled his sweeping prison reform package, which included finally closing the prison, but also renovating Waupun. And these are two of the state's oldest prisons that have had a host of issues. They were on lockdowns. They've had deaths. The list goes on and on. So while this is what some people are praising, others are also saying, well, wait, maybe not so fast.
So look, it looks like everybody now feels like they want Green Bay closed. The question is, will they close it and will they replace it with something else? So the governor briefed us a week ago on his plan, what he wants to do. It's a multi-step plan to overhaul, revamp the prison system. Mm-hmm. Step one, getting Lincoln Hills closed. Getting those kids out of there. Milwaukee's going to open the new Type 1 facility for the most serious youthful offenders, help move those kids there, open a Dane County facility, about $130 million to build that one, to take care of the youth. Then you turn Lincoln Hills into a medium security adult facility. Then you go to Stanley and make it a maximum security prison. And it's like step by step. As you do this, you can then go to Waupun and do this construction project, which will happen as we're trying to expand earned early release. That's a key component to this. What the governor wants to do is take existing programs with drug and alcohol treatment, add more employees to expand that, and to weave in a new vocational training component. So it would be for people who are have 4 years or less left in their sentences, who are nonviolent offenders, stress that over and over again,
yes.
Nonviolent offenders, you could earn early release. It is patterned, the vocational piece, after a Republican bill that passed the Assembly last session but did not get a vote in the Senate. As all this is working together, you can then take Waupun, which They're down from their maximum capacity from before. Remember, they went down to like single cell occupancy,
yes,
fall of 23 because of the problems there. You move everybody from there elsewhere. Then you demolish all of the housing at La Pond. You build a new vocational village, a modern facility behind the old facade, and can move people back in. Then Green Bay can close. Now, that entire plan from the governor.
Not one thing cannot happen.
That's what he says.
Yes.
Would reduce capacity in the system over by 700 beds. That is going to be a tough sell with Republican lawmakers because that means fewer people could be in prison, like housed in our capacity. I don't get the pressure and go for that. Now, the word from Republicans has been over and over again, he wants to put dangerous people on the street. Right? That's been their response so far. The governor's folks were like, we took your idea. This is what you guys came up with and worked into our system, our proposal. So will they keep up the this is a dangerous prisoner type thing, release thing? Because that's, you know, using against Republicans or Democrats. Dems have been hit with that before about, you know, safety and that kind of stuff. As Republicans get this plan, they're going to change it. That is clear. There's no way they're going to do. My question is it like the Brewer Stadium bill with the governor a few years ago where the governor had a plan in his budget, keep the Brewers in Milwaukee until 2040. Republicans worked the entire thing, and then he was happy because, hey, we got the Brewers here. They didn't care about the details.
Right.
The Brewers stayed. Green Bay, though, this is going to be the challenge from what people tell me. The governor will not expand capacity. You're not going to have him build a prison to replace Green Bay as is to have more beds in the system we have right now. So my question is, do Republicans tweak what the governor does and close Green Bay, or do they revamp it a lot, close Green Bay, but have a new Green Bay prison? The governor said a facility to replace La Pond and Green Bay, which is 1,700 beds, would be $1.25 billion, like a decade to build. But do Republicans want a prison just to replace Green Bay? Keep capacity as it is. Don't drop 700 beds. Those are things to watch as debate goes forward. What's their plan look like? Is the governor happy? I asked him the briefing. If they change anything, because you're saying every step must happen, will you veto it? That'd be a tough decision. Again, what's it look like in the end? Can they agree on what's going to happen and will they finally get this stuff done? Because again, they all want Green Bay to close. The question is, will close and be it, or close and have a new prison someday in the Green Bay area?
Right. If you had talked to Green Bay lawmakers, they're like, yeah, this is great. Finally, you know, Evers saying we got to close down Green Bay. But the devil's in the details. And I also asked Representative Mark Bourne, the co-chair on Joint Finance, what about that plan? You know, obviously we're talking a lot about budget stuff. And he said there are some good things in there. And I think when I heard that, it is very similar to shared revenue. Yep. Like you mentioned, very similar to the Milwaukee Brewers. Evers puts a starting point. Hey, here's my plan. If you want to nix some of it, part of it, go ahead. But as long as we get it done, I think is usually the broad consensus. So we'll see where it goes. But I think that to have somewhat of a starting point, this is going to be a big story. But it's just a matter of when and how much lawmakers are going to allocate to the several aspects of this plan.
And a key piece, what Evers wants to do is keep a prison in La Pond. The talk about a new prison to replace La Pond in Green Bay has covered over one big problem. If you take away the La Pond prison, I don't say you kill La Pond, but there's a giant gaping hole in that community because it's built around that prison.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this plan, I'd probably say it's probably the most thoughtful plan we've seen yet to revamp the system that keeps La Pond happy and addresses Green Bay.
All right. Real quickly, following this week, election law challenges.
So the Supreme Court of Wisconsin ruled a local Republican official did not have standing to challenge Racine's use of a mobile van during the August 22 primary. So they didn't get the merits of the case and the decision. What they basically said is you have to be personally aggrieved to challenge an election law. Make it as short as I can. The Elections Commission got a complaint, said, you have enough standing to challenge this, Kenneth Brown. He then went to court, challenged it, got a ruling from a circuit court judge that said this was not appropriate. The Supreme Court saying you can't challenge, even though you filed the complaint, you can't challenge the complaint the Elections Commission decided in circuit court. It raises the bar for challenges going forward. It's going to make it harder for people like Kenneth Brown to challenge stuff. It's kind of a reinforcing a standard in the courts of like when you can and can't challenge election law procedure.
All right. That'll do it for another busy week in politics. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.